Chapter 49. I don't feel anything, Richard said. Sitting cross-legged on a wedge of white stone set in the otherwise complete ring of grass that swept in a circle around the sorcerer's sand, he looked up at Nikki standing behind him with her arms folded, watching him draw the spells. You're not supposed to feel anything. You're constructing spells, not making love to a woman. Oh, I thought I would... I don't know.
Swoon?
No, I mean feel some connection to my gift, some kind of nervous fervor or delirium or something. Her blue eyes slowly surveyed the latest components. Some people like to add in emotional elements when they draw spell forms because they like to feel the rush of their heart pounding, the pit of their stomach tightening, or their skin crawling, that sort of thing. But it's entirely unnecessary, mere theatrics. They think they should moan and sway when they're doing such things. Her eyes turned to him, an eyebrow arching with a taunting expression. If you want, I can show you how. It might make a long night a little more entertaining. Richard knew she was just trying to teach him something about the reality of what he was doing by making him feel silly for interjecting the remnants of superstition into what she was trying to teach him was an exacting methodology. It was the kind of lesson that Zed used to use, the kind of lesson that stuck, that wouldn't be forgotten, as so often happened with an equivocal response. Some people like to be naked every time they draw the spell forms, she added. No thanks. Richard cleared his throat. I can do without moaning, or my heart racing, or my skin crawling, or being naked as I draw. I thought you might feel that way. That's why I never suggested such additions to the basics. She gestured to the drawings in the sand. Whether or not you feel anything, your gift contributes what is essential. The spell forms do what they need to do as long as you give them the correct elements, in the right order, added at the right time. Don't worry, though, there will be things you must draw naked, she added. Richard knew about those spell forms. He didn't like to dwell on them any more than necessary. Nikki cocked her head a little as she gazed down critically at the angled double lines he was drawing. Kind of like making bread. If you add the right things in the right way, the dough does what it's supposed to do. Shivering and shaking doesn't help the dough rise or the bread bake. Mm-hmm, Richard said as he went back to dragging a finger through the sorcerer's sand, folding an arc around the angled element. Just like bread, except that if you do it wrong, it can kill you. Well, I've had bread that I thought might kill me, she murmured absently as she carefully watched what he was doing, her body leaning almost as if to help him curve the line just so. Nikki had been able to recreate some of the elements he was drawing from the book Berdine had brought to them when they'd been in Panis Rall's tomb. Some of the spell forms had been broken down and diagrammed in the book. For others, Nikki's understanding and experience were invaluable, enabling her to infer some of the remaining parts of the spell forms from the text alone. In that way, she had recreated everything necessary. Richard had been worried that the book didn't actually illustrate everything that the process needed, and that Nikki might be inferring wrong. She had told them that they had a great many very real things to worry about, but that particular concern wasn't one of them. For Richard, this was also a practical test, a chance to use the things he had been studying day and night before the challenge that was to come, the one that would take him into the world of the dead. They didn't have the boxes, of course. But once the boxes were in play, there were preliminary procedures that could be done without them. Those measures, considering how dangerous they were not something that Richard was looking forward to, but he had no choice. If he wanted to get Kaelin back, along with everything else he needed to accomplish, then there were things he was simply going to have to do, no matter how much he feared them. At least his ancient benefactor, First Wizard Barakas, had left a number of clues to help him. Now that Richard had been reconnected with his gift, he also needed to recover the book that Barakas had left for him, Secrets of a War Wizard's Power. If there was ever a time that he needed the information that would be contained in that book, now was that time. The book, along with the War Wizard outfit, much of which also used to belong to Barakas, was hidden in the castle down in Tamarang, not far from the wilds. Unfortunately, that was also where Richard had last seen Six, just before Commander Karg had captured him and taken him to the Imperial Order encampment. As Richard carefully drew the spell forms, he was also impatient for the Emperor to start losing sleep, start feeling tense and distracted. He had been confident and sure of himself for long enough. It was time for Jagang to start having nightmares. Richard could just hear the harsh croaks coming through the glass above them. He glanced up and saw Jillian's raven, Loki, perched on the framework of the glass, watching them. From high in the sky, the raven had followed his lifelong friend throughout her captivity, feasting on the ample refuse throughout the camp. Loki had seemed to consider the whole thing, as he considered most things in life, nothing more than a curious holiday. Jillian had known that Loki was there, but she never let on lest one of Jagang's guards shoot the bird with an arrow. Loki was a wary bird, though, and seemed to vanish whenever anyone took notice of him. Jillian said that a few times when she came out of Jagang's tent, she saw the raven fly high above and do stunts to show off for her. Being a captive of Jagang, though, Jillian hadn't been cheered by the antics of her raven. She had been in a state of constant terror. A few flakes of snow were beginning to collect in the corners of the leaded glass. Against the night sky, the inky black bird was mostly invisible. Sometimes only its bill and its eyes reflecting the torchlight could be seen, giving it the appearance of a ghostly apparition watching them. From time to time, the raven tilted its head, as if it, too, were evaluating Richard's tedious work. As it flapped its wings to animate its raucous caws, moonlight appearing from time to time between the scudding clouds reflected off its glossy black feathers. The raven was impatiently waiting to do its part. "Are you ready?" Richard asked, still concentrating as he drew a line in the sorcerer's sand. Jillian nodded nervously. She had been waiting her whole life for this moment. Sitting in the center of a place cleared for her in the sorcerer's sand, with spells drawn all around her, she was looking very solemn. She knew that this was the purpose for which her grandfather had selected her, trained her. She was the priestess of the bones, meant to cast dreams to protect her people. Torches ringing the sand in the center of the lawn softly hissed. Their flames slowly wavered in the dead still air. The dark band painted across Jillian's face, across her copper-colored eyes, was meant to hide her from evil spirits. As the priestess of the bones, she was now Richard's servant. Richard, as the Lord Rawl, was now the one meant to help her cast the dreams. It was an ancient connection between their people, meant for mutual protection. What they were casting, however, was not exactly dreams. They were casting nightmares. Jillian's people were from Casca. She had been learning to be a teller, someone respected for their knowledge of the ancient times and her people's heritage. Her grandfather was the living teller, the one teaching her the old knowledge, the lore of their past. Some day that legacy would be passed to Jillian. Her ancestors, a gentle people who had hoped to evade conflicts by settling in a wasteland no one else would covet, had cast dreams to keep potential trouble away. Then, as now, they had cast dreams to repel the Horde from the Old World to the south. In that great war they had failed, and been all but destroyed. Richard and Nicky had listened carefully to the tellings, to everything Jillian knew about those ancestral times. Between that, the book, and his own knowledge of the relevant history, Richard had pieced together what had happened. Most of Jillian's ancestors had been killed, but a number had been captured and turned over to the wizards from the Old World, who coveted their unique ability. Those people were used by the wizards as the raw material to create human weapons. What those wizards had conjured from the captives had become the Dreamwalkers, men used not to cast dreams, but to invade them. Now Jagang was the only living Dreamwalker, the living link to the great war from 3,000 years before, the war that had reignited. From what Richard had learned, a Dreamwalker had been born into the world again because an enemy spy had gotten into the Temple of the Winds and tampered with magic banished there. Wizard Barakas had found a solution. ensuring that Richard would be born with both sides of the gift in order to counter that threat. Jillian's people were descended from the same stock Jagang had come from. His ancestors had once been dreamcasters, like Jillian. And now Jillian was once again, as the priestess of the bones, about to fulfill her ancient calling of casting dreams to repel the invaders. With one exception. Back in the Great War, Jillian's ancestors had failed. Everything Jillian knew from the telling spoke of casting dreams. Richard thought that might have been why they failed. He instead intended to cast nightmares. "Do you have the nightmares fixed in your mind?" he asked in a quiet voice. Jillian's copper-colored eyes opened, appearing in the blackness of the painted band. "Yes, Father Rawl. I never had nightmares before these cruel people from the old world returned. I only had dreams. I never really knew what nightmares were." She swallowed. "Now I know nightmares." "Someday, Jillian," Richard said as he bent and drew a starburst symbol before her, "I hope you can forget what nightmares are. But for now, I need you to keep your thoughts focused on them." "I promise, Lord Rawl, but I'm only a girl. Are you really sure that I can cast nightmares to all those men?" Richard looked up into her eyes. "Those men have come to kill everything you love. You think up the nightmares, and Loki will carry them to the men down in that camp. I will see to it." Nikki squatted down beside Richard. "Jillian, don't think about how many men there are down there. It doesn't matter. Honestly. Where Loki goes, he carries your dreams. As he flies over the camp, the nightmares will be dropping from his midnight black wings like an icy rain. It may not touch every man, but that doesn't matter. It will touch a great many, and that's all that counts." Nikki gestured to the spell forms before the girl. "These are the power, not you. These spells do the work of planting the nightmare over and over in those men, not you. Your only job is to think of the nightmare. See the spell here?" Nikki asked as she gestured to a continuous loop that folded in on itself. "This part endlessly multiplies your nightmare over and over. But it seems like it would take more effort than I can do." With a small smile of reassurance, Richard reached out and laid a hand on Jillian's arm. "It is I who helps you cast the dreams, remember? You must only think them. It is I who cast them as needed. It's your thoughts, along with my strength, that does it. I can sure enough think of nightmares." She smiled a little then. "And you're sure enough strong, Lord Rawl. I guess it makes sense when you both put it like that. Now I understand why I've needed you to cast dreams. That's why the Priestess of the Bones had to wait for you to return to us." Richard patted her arm. "The other thing you need to remember is that after Loki flies around the camp, you must send him to land on Jagang's tent. We want to give nightmares to as many men as possible, but Jagang is the focus of those nightmares, and that special dream with which I want to torment him. So when I whisper to you that it's time for Loki to land, you think about Jagang and his tent. This spell here," he pointed, "will send Loki to perch by the man. When I tell you, all you have to do is to remember Jagang, and Loki will go to his tent." Jillian nodded. "I remember that awful tent." Her copper-colored eyes, filling with tears, turned to Nikki. "And I sure enough know the nightmares that happened there." Overhead, Loki cawed and flapped his wings, eager to be away with his cargo of nightmares.